We're doing the Drashot Ran. We're up to page Nun Tet in the Machon Shadem edition, page Kuf Samach Gimel in the Mosad Erev Kook edition. And the Ran had been discussing why do people enter idol worship. And he said that there are two ways to access the forces in the world. One way is the logical way, and the other way is a way that we don't exactly understand. It's a metaphysical way. But because it works, so people start thinking that if there's a way of affecting the world that I don't exactly understand, so maybe if I worship that force, then I can get more benefit out of it. The fact that forces exist in the world and we can tap into them and we don't understand them exactly, or some of us don't understand them exactly, that automatically opens room for misunderstandings and the thoughts of idol worship. I'll get more if I serve it. I'll get more if I do this type of worship or that type of worship. Because I've been shown that there's something that my logic doesn't comprehend that does work in the world. And this that I explained, says the Ran, removes many areas of doubt, many areas, questionable areas, and really it clarifies some very, very difficult concepts. And that is, undoubtedly those that are drawn to idol worship, those that desire it, undoubtedly they are not fools. Chazal repeatedly teaches this. And undoubtedly, their experimentation validated for them that they would benefit if they served these idols, that these actions of idol worship did have an impact. They weren't stupid. Because if not, then how do you explain that so many generations erred in the practice of idol worship? But the reason that so many intelligent people were drawn to the idol worship is the way we explained. And that is because in ancient times, they knew all kinds of secrets of how to do different actions that would give benefit. Their only error was in their understanding of why it worked. But that it worked, yes, it worked. If a person walks out into the sun, if we take a simple example, he walks out into the sun and he is warmed by the sun. So he is correct. You walk out into the sun, you're warmed by the sun. He wears a black shirt and suddenly he's even warmer out in the sun. So now, these are facts. What happens if he starts saying to himself, well, I guess black is the color to worship in order to get warmer. So then he's taking a concept which is true, factual, but he's misapplying it. He's misunderstanding the logic behind it. So the Ran says, we can't say that everyone was stupid. All these idol worshippers, they didn't know what they were doing? No, they did know what they were doing. And what they did actually benefited them. They just misappropriated the forces. And therefore they reached inaccurate conclusions. And the reason they benefited was because of themselves, not because some angel suddenly loves them. You walk into the sun, I don't think that the sun loves you any more than if you sit in the building. But suddenly it's going to warm you more. So what are you going to say? Ooh, I have to get up early in the morning and worship the sun so that it keeps warming me. You see, when I stand outside, he's happier with me. He gives me more warmth. That was their error. They were correct, factually. Their actions did benefit them. But they misapplied them. Their misunderstanding was that they thought that there's a force there that loves them. That's like saying, I dropped the pen, it went down to planet Earth. Oh, Earth loves me, let me worship the Earth. No, there's a force here at play, that's correct. But that my relationship to the force, if I can put myself in a situation where I tap into the force, that's why I tap into it. It's not because there's any personal relationship between us. There's nothing out there that loves me. There's a force at play, and that what they erred was that they applied a personality to that force. And then they expanded that to the point of offering sacrifices and incense to the different forces that would be in him. And then the logical conclusion is שכל מה שהיה מצד הכנת המתפל הוא דבר אמיתי מועיל. So according to our explanation, says the Ran, technically the reason that it worked was because of what they did. It's not because the force out there loves them, but they were able to position themselves in a way where they could tap into the force. So then you know what? In that regard, what they did was true. Mutal b'dalkat Torah, and that action should be permissible according to the Torah. There's nothing wrong with tapping into forces of nature. So our simple example is there's nothing wrong with walking out and enjoying the sun. There's something wrong with starting to pray to the sun and saying the sun is a god that loves me and attributing a personality to the sun. But the action of tapping into a force in nature, that's permissible. אבל מה שיהיה מצד הישג רצון הפועל העליון. But once you want to acquire the desires, to be in good favor with the will of the forces that be, that's davar batel, that's nonsense, umin avodah zarah, a type of idol worship. So long as I'm tapping into the force, that's okay. The second I attribute personality to the force, and I want to be in good favor with that, that's when it becomes idol worship. ולפי זה כל מה שלא יכוון בו להשיג רצון הפועל ולא יהיה בו עבודה לעבודה זרה ידועה יהיה מותר. So then it turns out that anything you do that's not with the intent of finding good favor in the eyes of the force that might be, and it's not an action that's a known action of idol worship, that would be mutar ולא יהיה נסם שום דחי המורי, nor would it be prohibited from the biblical prohibition, don't go in the ways of the Amori. Don't do actions like the Amori. What? Think Parshas Achrimos? Achrimos or Kadosha? I think so. לכן מתאים דברי הרמב״ם ז"ל בפרק ל"ז מחלק השלישי מהמורה. And that's what it seems like if you read the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim in the third section, the 37th chapter, Shuzal Katav, that the Rambam over there wrote, Shema Shamu Razal, that which our sages taught us. There's the Gemara in the 6th chapter, I think, of Shabbos. The Gemara discusses different things that would be Darche Moreh and would not be. And then the Tosefta expands on it, on the Mishnah, and then the Gemara expands on the Tosefta. So what the sages said, kol davar sheyesh bo mishum refuah, ein bo mishum dachei amori, anything that works to heal a person, you can't consider that a sorcery of darchei ha'emori. The Gemara understands that the prohibition of doing darchei amori is something that's superstitious. The emori, if you'd come to Israel, maybe if they saw a black cat walking down the road, they wouldn't go down that road, they'd go down a different road. Okay. They do all kinds of superstitious things. They do things that there's no logical reason for them. So that, Chazal understood, was really rooted in idol worship. Along comes the Gemara and says, anything that works medically is not Darchei Amori. There was a big discussion about this, about alternative medicine. You know, Avogadro's principle, that molecularly, after you reach a certain number, so then an element doesn't exist. So part of homeopathic medicine is that they take an element, and they mix it with many, many, many other... that technically, it's past Avogadro's principle. Technically, molecularly, there's nothing left of that. All you have is, let's say, whey sugar. You have sugar that's protein, sugar from milk. And molecularly, there should be nothing left. But they say that element still has an effect. So in France, that's recognized medicine. How do we treat it halachically? If scientifically, we don't understand it. Is that Darchei Amori? Is that already superstitious? Or is that medicine? So the Gemara says anything that works isn't Darchei Amori. But in Halacha there's a big discussion about certain types of alternative medicines. There's an Almana that we know that she used the Bach flowers. There are different types of flowers that can affect the person. So I don't disagree that these flowers can affect the person. But how does she know which flowers to prescribe? So she'd say a name, you'd put out your hand, she'd say a name, try to push down your hand. You never heard this name before, you never heard of the flower before. But she said, your body will respond to the name that's right and the name that's wrong. The name that's fit for it and not. If the hand goes down, that's a sign it's not for you. If the hand stays firm, then it is for you, or vice versa, whatever it is. I told her, I'm not sure she's allowed to do it. Maybe it's a Darchei Amori. If the names were in Lashon HaKodesh, so maybe you could say somewhere your neshama resonates with them. Maybe if we really knew the names in Lashon HaKodesh, maybe you could say that. I still wouldn't say it, but maybe. But she's finding some kind of Latin or who knows what name the person never heard of it for. There's no logic in that. So there is a biblical prohibition of Darchei Amori, but Chazal say anything that works medicinally is not Darchei Amori. The Rambam explains שרוצים בזה that what our sages were teaching us, שכל מה שגזרו היו נתיבי, that anything that logic, that scientific research validates, that it works as a natural means of healing, הוא מותר, that's permitted. וזולתו, but anything we don't understand scientifically, says the Rambam אסור, is prohibited. וכתב שם, and the Rambam over there says, על יקשה בעיניך מה שתראו מהם, כמסמר מהסלו ושן מהשואל, you shouldn't wonder, how did Chazal permit us, that the Talmud over there says, if you take a thorn, if you take a piece of wood from a cross, from a cross that someone was hung on, from a tree that someone was hung on, then it could reduce swelling. So the Gemara over there discusses, why would that piece of wood reduce swelling? Well, that's permitted, that works. The Talmud says, if you take tooth of shual. Shual is a fox. A fox's tooth. They sell that? They used to sell that in America when I was a kid. Fox's tooth. So the Talmud says like this. If it was taken out of the fox when it was alive, it'll help you stay awake. If it was taken out of the fox when it was dead, it'll help you fall asleep. And the Talmud says it works. So the Rambam says, you're going to ask me, how does that work scientifically? And why is that permitted? Says the Rambam, כדברים מהם בזמנו היו חושבים שהוציאו אותם הניסיון. Because in Chazal's time, Chazal thought that experimentation had proven that it worked. So according to the Rambam, experimentation means it works scientifically. Do I have to understand it scientifically, how it works molecularly? No. But if science proves that it works, that seems to be okay according to the Rambam. Al derech tliyat esev anikra poneya, just like people hang this herb that's called poneya, when a person has epilepsy, they used to hang this herb around their neck, and it worked. Because anything that was validated that it works, you're permitted to do, says the Rambam, because you're not doing it as a superstitious way of worshipping any force. That's a way of healing. And then we treat it like we would treat the different medications that we use for a person who's constipated. You say, it works, what do you care? At the end of the day, it helps the person relieve himself. Eilu dvaravza. That's what the Rambam writes there. V'yitchayev mizeh, shekol ma she'asra oto ha-Torah, v'advarim abtilim, she'en ben mamash. So what did the Torah prohibit? Nonsense. The Torah prohibited us from doing things that really don't work. Ve'em ne'aseg yotzon ha-mashpia. So then why do you do them? That goes back to the principle the Ran said. Then we assume you're doing them to appease a force. Because if scientifically it doesn't work, then why do you think it's going to help you? So at the root of it, that's what Chazal say. If you see an action that the Gentiles do and you don't understand why they're doing it, you should know it's rooted in idol worship. Comes the Ran and gives us a beautiful shot. Why is it rooted in idol worship? It's not because you might think, hey, it's superstitious, I don't understand it, so it must be idol worship. No, it must be that someone said at some point, this is how you appease this force. That's the idea that it's rooted in idol worship. And he said, that's the difference between idol worship and real medicine. To tap into a force, that's okay. That's kosher. You could use forces that be in the world. Everything we do is tapping into some kind of force. That's okay. When you start assuming that that force has personality, and you can affect its desire, and there's a connection between you and it, you're going to do actions that make it happy, that's idol worship. Shu devar enu amitut, and that has no truth. But if you're going to do something that prepares you to tap into a force, even though you don't always understand how you tap into a force, and here he sticks in a caveat, he says, like amulets. Oh, wait. Oh, yeah. He opened up a Pandora's box and he says it in the sentence that's leaving off. So that's permitted because you figured out a way to tap into a force. That's okay. You don't understand how it works, but you understand that it works. That's okay. Yeah. Okay, so he gave us a phenomenal chiddush today. He gave us the understanding of idol worship, why people desired idol worship, because it worked. What worked was not what they thought was working. They attributed it to, I made the sun happy, so it's warming me, and really, no, I'm positioning myself in a way to tap into the force. The practical aspects of doing actions that actually work, according to the Ran, it's not so pashut that we take all this halacha lemaisa, but according to the Ran, anything that's practical, that works, that scientifically works, would be permitted. The prohibited is the things that are not understandable, the things that we don't see work logically, we don't see scientifically, experimentation doesn't validate that it really works. So then the assumption is that what you're doing is trying to appease a force, not tap into a force. Tapping into forces of nature is permitted, says the Ran. Appeasing forces of nature is idol worship and prohibited.